This is a Pod Dealers Network podcast.
I love it when weeks like this happen and the episodes just like create themselves, man. Like the music comes together and the topic just, you know, pops up out of nowhere or whatever and is irresistible. So yeah, feeling like this might be a good one. Shouts to Daphne.
What is TWS podcast episode, whatever? Who cares at this point?
Bar.
The rant of the vindicator.
It's my podcast and I do what I want to.
People, listen.
Word, is it still live?
It's not working for me, Red Dye. We're going to keep going.
I know I changed my voice at work.
Bars on the radio.
What is TWS podcast?
I'm ready.
I feel like the Neanderthal.
Staring at my watch and I'm feeling so new school.
Suicide attempts, how many tries to take?
Damn, ready.
In this world of ordinary people, extraordinary people,
I'm glad there is
you in this world.
Feel like I should drop some bars after that or something, like, and I got some bars, but I'm not gonna do it. Anyway, welcome to another episode of the What Is TWS podcast. As always, I'm your boy J.D. Flan, representing the White Pants Society, and I want to thank you first and foremost for taking whatever time it is that you have to come chill with me and talk about whatever it is we're gonna talk about this evening. You could be anywhere else in the world, but you're here with me, and I greatly appreciate it. That is dope of you. You know, this is, so that wasn't my last episode, it was my last episode, but not the last episode, whatever, we're not going to go down that rabbit hole. Continuing on, I almost wanted to do an episode last week in place of that one. I wasn't sure how I felt about it, but, you know, I did record the two, like, back-to-back 2 weeks in advance, so I would have it just in case, you know, after the surgery. If I wasn't feeling up to doing it, or I was, you know, heavily on them narcotics or whatever, I could still get something out. But I went ahead and let it run, and I got some dope feedback from it. So, you know, I guess I'm glad that I did it. The numbers dipped a little bit, but it's, you know, it is what it is. I know I haven't been like focused on promoting the episodes as much lately. It is really like the lack of my hand. You know, like I'm at the point now, like the surgery went well. I guess it went well. They rolled me into a room. Lady put the mask on my face. And the next thing I know, I was, you know, waking up to Chad sitting in a chair beside me so he could give me a ride home. But so, yeah, I'm guessing everything went well. I have use of all of my fingers. My, you know, I don't know, that's which is better than it was before. I'm still in like a splint or whatever, which is irritating. It's not all the way up to the elbow, so I do have some freedom of movement a little bit. But yeah, long story short, surgery went well. So thank God for that. Man, so real quick to just recap some of that, because that was an interesting process for me. And really, I guess my idea, if I had one for last week, which wasn't much of one, was just like the crazy shit that happened, like, involving the surgery and everything. I got up that morning because I wasn't going to surgery until like it's supposed to start at 1, which means I needed to be there at like 11:15 or whatever. And the place is maybe 15-20 minutes away from my apartment. So, you know, I know I didn't have to wake up early or anything like that. But I got up just because, I don't know, I was having surgery and it was like, you know, it's like Christmas morning, like, you know, you just got to get up because something big is happening today. So I was up and I was just like watching TV and like trying to listen to music, trying to get myself in the zone or whatever. I've said "or whatever" a lot this episode already, and that's fucking with me, but neither here nor there. If there's anything I can say, like, whatever's happened in my life in the last couple years, I found some solace in like the fact that like I was going in. I've never really had like surgery, not as an adult, or not even as I don't know, that I can remember. I think I had surgery. I talked about that. I told the, you know, the funny story about my mom laughing when they gave me that anesthesia as a, like a 3-year-old. And I think that was the last time I had anything like major, you know, done to me, where I had to be put out and they was basically cutting my body open to do something. So it really felt to me like there, if there was a reason, if there was a moment for me to be nervous or anxious or you know, feeling some kind of fear about something, like that was rationally the time that I had full license to do so. And it was dope that like, nah, I was really, really at peace. Like, I might have freaked my mom out a little bit because something was happening and it had nothing to do with the surgery. I think it had something to do with like me reading some tweets between like Fonse and Sky Zoo about conversations that they had, and like it seemed as if Fonte was kind of sort of taken aback or caught by surprise about like his influence on Sky Zoo and whatever the like the nature of their friendship was, but how important their conversations were to him, that, you know, Sky Zoo would mention it specifically on a record. And so it just hit me like that, you know, you got to give people up their flowers while they can smell them, and you got to like just like tell people how important they are to you, or, you know, or what they've been to you. And so like the night before the surgery, I called my mom to just like thank her for being a mom and thank her for everything that she's done for me. But like, my mom is one of those people. She's extremely dramatic, and like she goes over the top with shit. And so like, anytime my sister and I, all kids have complaints about their childhood. All kids, no matter how old you are, you have something about your childhood that you think was kind of fucked up. And when you get old enough, you get a chance to like air those grievances with your parents. You're like, you're intelligent enough to make the conversation, you know, to have the conversation in a way where you can actually express what you feel was wrong about whatever that situation is. And in the past, my mom gets it, you know, she's one of them, like, take me now, Jesus, take me now, like, bury me with the body or whatever. She's one of them kind of people sometimes. And so whenever me and my sister, you know, get in one of them modes, or be like, mom, you did this, and we blah, 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 and yada, 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 whatever it is, you know, she goes into this. She has a whole, like, speech. I can almost do it word for word, but basically it's, you know, some people weren't meant to be parents. Maybe I shouldn't have been a parent. She talks about how, like her pregnancies were so difficult, and she lost children before us. And, you know, maybe it was like, you know, somebody telling her that this wasn't meant for her or whatever, and she shouldn't have done it. And every, you know, it gets, it could be a lot. Like if, and this will happen in front of people. So, if you're listening to this and you're a person that I may at some point in the future become close with, and you get to be around my family, my immediate family, my mother, my sister, and I, you may hear these conversations and it will make you mad, uncomfortable, but everything's cool. Like, don't worry. Like, this is not the first time it happened. It won't be the last time it happened. We all gonna get past it. We gonna hug it out by the time the night is over. And that's still gonna be my homie when I leave. But yeah, this happens in front of people. She just goes to this whole thing about how she should have never been a mother and everything. So it was on my heart that night to just like call her and just let her know, like, you know, what she's been to me, and the advantages I think I got in life having her as a mother, and the things she exposed me to, and the person that I am now, and how much of that comes from her. I think, you know, and what I plan to talk about today, I'm gonna reference my mom, you know, probably a couple times, quote her, because that's what I do. Like, she's that important to me. So that was sort of a weird moment, like trying to explain to her that, like, I don't freak out, like, I don't, like, nothing's gonna happen. They operating on my wrist. You know, I wholly expect to be alive tomorrow evening, but it still is, like, it feels pressing on me right now to say this to you right now. You never know when somebody needs to hear something. Like, you never know when somebody's in a place and just to hear that you love them, or that they mean something to you, or that they were important to you, or that they are important to you, may do something for somebody. So if you feel a way about a person, tell them. But that's what happened. That was the night before. So the day of, like I said, I get up, I'm trying to get in the zone. I'm in a peaceful mood, but, you know, like, I am going to get surgery. So it's like and it's like the most adult thing I've done in a long time. Like, I'm very, y'all don't understand. Like, when I talk about, like, me being proud about how I've handled situations, it's not, like, I'm not really trying to brag, because I don't think anybody should be proud of just being able to take care of themselves. But it's not always been a skill that I had. So, like, you know, seeing myself in some of these moments, like how I broke my wrist and I've made the doctor's appointments and I've, you know, seen the people I needed to see and had the surgery scheduled and figured out how to use my insurance and got myself there the morning of the thing, followed the doctor's instructions, you know, fasted, you know, didn't drink anything that morning, came in ready. So I get there, I walk in, and this seems like it's like a sports medicine place. Like, I don't know what their usual clientele is, but it seems to be like either like sports injuries or older folks, like people who probably should have orthopedic issues at their age and they have to have procedures done to help them out with stuff. I don't know that they get a lot of me, my demographic, not just, you know, my age, but probably my race and just, you know, unathletic, whatever it is that I am. I don't think they get a whole lot of me. So I get there and I go to check myself in. And mind you, like, I really haven't gotten a lot of information leading up to this. I don't ask a lot of questions, and that's a problem. I just don't. Like, every time I'm telling somebody, and most of the time I think it's because I'm a guy, so I don't know if it's just like men don't ask questions or pertinent questions. Because I'll be talking to my mom or, you know, my ex-wife when we were together, and I'd be telling them something that somebody told me, like, hey, so-and-so getting married, or so-and-so having a baby, or this happened to so-and-so. And it's like the number of questions they would come at me with would just be like, they told me what they told me. I didn't seek any additional information beyond what they told me. I don't know when they get married. I don't know where the ceremony is going to be. I don't know none of that. I just know they told me they got engaged, and I was like, congratulations, boom, 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 you know, whatever. So this whole process, like, you know, I went in to see an orthopedic surgeon. He stepped out the room, looked at the x-rays, came back in, told me the nature of the injury. He was calm about it, so I was calm about it, and he was just like, boom, we got you scheduled for next Wednesday. Come on in. Here's a pamphlet on what you need to do to prepare. That's all I knew, right? So, the week leading up to it, I got a couple phone calls. They was getting on my nerves. They was calling me like couple of hours, just like phone call after phone call. But most of it was like going on websites and filling out paperwork and medical history. And it was a lot of the same questions. Like, we really got to get better at this. Like all of these organizations seem like they're connected somehow. It seemed like the doctor's office. So there's one like Texas orthopedic, whatever it was. It's the same fucking building. There's like the doctor's office upstairs where I saw the surgeon who was going to perform my surgery, had me fill out certain paperwork about my medical history and my allergies and blah, blah, blah. And then I go downstairs to hand them, you know, the orders for my surgery. They basically gave me an envelope. I ain't open it. You know, they say, take it downstairs. Boom, I go downstairs. I give them that. And then during the week, I get calls to fill out paperwork, which is the very same questions that I answer on the paperwork for the doctor's visit, like the week before. So none of it makes, I don't understand that. Like, somebody, we got to get better with that somehow. Like, and I'm in IT, so if there's some IT-related capacity that I could help, you know, some databases to connect or whatever. But stop asking people the same fucking questions. And also, this was the other thing that bothered me the most about this injury. I talked about like just not wanting to do shit these days. And mostly because I can move my fingers, but I don't have full freedom of movement because of the splint on my right hand. And I'm right-handed. And so just normal everyday tasks, when I think about performing them, like, I have to psych myself up to do it because the amount of energy it's going to take for either me to, you know, suck up the pain or the awkwardness of having to do it with my right hand with this lack of motion or to try to do it with my left hand. Like, it stops me from doing a lot of shit. Like, I'm ordering out a lot. I'm not cooking. I don't even order certain shit. I don't even order stuff. Last night was the first time I ordered something I had to eat with a fork because eating with a fork with my left hand, it feels stupid and I can't do it. And I'm not trying to spill shit all over the floor and whatever. But again, going to doctor's offices where they know what I'm coming there for, I have a right wrist injury. It's broken. The doctor, when he came in and saw the x-rays and was coming to tell me, you know, what the nature of my injury was, like, he did like a little, like a clown thing. He was like, yeah, and the complexity of your fracture is like, and he did the thumbs up, like, to let me know, like, it's high. And, like, like, your wrist is fucked up. Like, I said, I didn't know how bad I'm hurt. And every time I see that, I got to fill out something online, which is painful, but I can type with my left hand and I can get my right hand in there to help out a little bit. But then when I get there and you hand me like clipboards and a pen, and some more shit that I got to fill out, which is the same shit I've already filled out, or even I got a sign or initial, it's just like, holy fuck. Like, we are not past that. It's my right hand. I can't write. And every time I come someplace, y'all are asking me to write something. And that is excruciating. Like, it may, like, it's like, how much do I really want this surgery? Like, if I really got to fill out this entire form, like, I want to just walk out right now. Like, fuck, I'm not doing it. Like, I can't do it. You should know I can't do it. Why the fuck are you asking me to do it? But anyway, dive. Me being who I am, as she hands me the clipboard with all the shit that I got to fill out on the day of my surgery. I see it's like a gold Amex on the desk. So she's taking some form of payment. Now, and mind you, during this whole process, nobody's talking to me about money. Like, I went, saw a doctor. I told him, here's my problem. They asked me for my insurance information before I got there. They got it. They scanned my card when I got there. They got it. He comes out and said, you scheduled for surgery next week. Okay, bet. That's what it is. During the week, I told you I got all those phone calls. One of the phone calls was for, I guess, you know, they wanted payment in advance for the surgeon. So they called me and said, hey, it's going to be this much for the surgeon. And he told me this was for the doctor's time. So not for the surgery, but for the doctor's time. You still got to pay the facility. And they didn't say you still got to pay the facility, but these are the other charges involved in the surgery. The actual facility, the I don't know, the tools, whatever it is, the disposables, all that shit that they use, you know, that's not the doctor's time. So I paid that. Boom. Oh, this is what it costs. I'm thinking, you know, my insurance covered XYZ. They need this from me. Boom. Here you go. So that's the only discussion I've had with anybody about payment. And that payment was like less than $500, which, you know, I feel when you're dealing with stuff of this nature, you're expecting expenses like that. So, okay. What the fuck up? Bow. Paid that. But I get there that day. Filling out the clipboard. I see she got the gold Amex on the thing. I'm like, oh, somebody balling. I think it's a sports injury play. I might have been in there with like a hockey player. And I don't know none of them. So he got a pass. But so I fill out my form. I come back up. I'm handing her stuff. But the lady says to me, you know, I was just like, all right. And then, you know, your charge for today. And she basically told me right then and there, right now, on the day you're scheduled to have surgery, meaning if you can't hand me the amount I'm asking for, I don't know what the fuck we're going to do. You know, I've already taken a day off work. But she, $1,500. Now, maybe that's not a lot of money to you. That's a lot of money to me. I feel like nobody should be able to hand you a bill for that amount without, like, apologizing first. It should be like a, hey, unfortunately, we're going to need, or, so sorry, sir, but we're going to need, you know, it should be something to acknowledge the fact that you, what the fuck did you just say to me? Like, it was like, you shouldn't be able to say those words to me. Like, I need $1,500 without some acknowledgement that you are inconveniencing me in a serious way. No. Thank the Lord. I'm in a position where I had it and that it wasn't going to like ruin the rest of my week or month or whatever. To part ways with it. I don't know what they would have done if I didn't have. I'm guessing from the fact that the dude in front of me had a gold Amex that like they are accustomed to that not being a thing for the people that come in there. But I don't have a gold Amex, and that is a thing for me. And everybody lucked out in this situation that I was, you know, in a position where I could do it. But I was fucked up. But like, I was, even after the surgery, people asked me how I was doing. I'm like, I'm still recovering from the 1500. Like, my arm is fine. Fuck my arm. Like, whatever. Like, that shit happened. They did. They cut. Whatever. I don't even know. I haven't seen it. I don't even know what the incision looks like. It's been wrapped up since, you know, I woke up. I went to sleep. I woke up like this. Like, whatever. I ain't worried about the arm. They took 1500 and then, like, as a surprise, like, at least tell me, you know, give me 24 hours, 48 hours notice that in 48 hours, somebody's going to present you with a bill for 1500 and you're going to need to give them that and smile and, like, not look surprised. Like, I'm trying not to look like, you know, like what I think they expect a black person that just got asked for 1500 to look like. I'm trying to like, not, oh, 1500. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You know, do you take a blood? You know, I don't know. I'm just trying to. I was pissed off about the 1500. Really pissed off. But anyway, surgery. I go in there. We get the surgery done. These people were professionals. The IVs and everything, you know, took no time. It normally takes a long time for people to find my veins or whatever, you know. I don't know what that means about me, but it is what it is. All that went smooth. I come home. And then the other thing that's been bothering me about the whole situation is the narcotics. So I told them when I came in for the initial visit that I'm in recovery. You know, I would like to avoid narcotics if possible. And it almost seemed like the response I feel like I got was, like, oh, really? That is admirable. We are, you know, I'm glad you expressed that. I'm glad you told us that. Here is a prescription for Tylenol with codeine because you're going to need it. And best of luck. Like, you know, like they heard me. They absolutely heard me and acknowledged the fact that I said I didn't want the narcotic. They were like, maybe you don't know what to expect. We're going to give you these narcotics. Like, that's what it is. I went to fill the prescription, and I had a long conversation with the pharmacist, just like, you know, I don't want to take these pills. He's like, well, if you know, they got to prescribe them to you, because if you get home and you're in pain, you know, then you might not be able to find a surgeon to prescribe you something. So they got to give it to you ahead of time, whether you want it or not. Like, if you don't feel like you should take it, don't take it, blah, blah, blah. You know, talking to friends and family, they were just like, you know, take it as prescribed. Don't refill it if they give you any refill. And I think maybe that's what they heard when I said I'm in recovery is, well, we're only going to give him a certain number of pills and no refill. So I only have like 2-3 days worth of pain meds and no refills. So thank them for that. You know, I was very rough on the doctors initially because I feel like they did not acknowledge my want to stay away from narcotics, but they obviously heard me, and I appreciate them for that. But yeah, so I came home, you know, the doctors, they put the fear of God in me, and they was just like, look, man, as soon as you get home, you need to take these pills because you don't want to wake up. You don't want to wait until you start hurting to take the pills because it's going to be too late. And they gave me a nerve block. First time I ever heard about it. This is another weird thing for me with surgeries. It's like the amount of stuff they wait to ask you until like it's about to go down. All right, so I'm there. I've already paid the $1,500 now. They already got me hooked up to IVs, and they've shaved my arm and shit and all kinds of crazy stuff. And then somebody comes in. Has anybody talked to you about the nerve block? You should know this. You know, this shouldn't be a question that you need me to answer, but no, nobody has come to talk to me about the nerve block. What the fuck is a nerve block? And so basically they was going to give me an injection like in my collarbone area that was going to, I guess, shut off the nerve to my entire right arm. And they give me a little piece of paper explaining it. And it says that it's like one of them fucking commercials you see late night where it's like telling me the side effects and it's, you know, nerve damage and stuff, brain damage. And I want to say death was somewhere on the list. But then they're also telling you like what they're about to do, and the doctor strongly recommends you get the nerve block. And it's like, right, you know what? Fuck it. We're going to do the nerve block. Like, whatever. So, so I had a nerve block. And so that's supposed to last like 24 hours. So they're basically telling me, like, it's not going to be where I feel a tingle and then the tingle gets stronger, blah, blah, blah. And then I, you know, like when I feel a tingle, maybe I could take the pain meds and, you know, that way it don't get any worse. They're like, the nerve block is going to wear off, and then everything that you have not been feeling, you're going to feel. So you need to take the pain meds as soon as you get home when you can't feel nothing, so that you good and doped up when the nerve block wears off, so that you don't feel nothing. So that's what I did. But yeah, if you ever had a nerve block, that's the most insane feeling in the world to me. So my arm, my right arm from the shoulder down was just non-existent. I couldn't feel nothing. It was foreign. It was just like a foreign thing swinging, and it was swinging free. Like there's no muscle control. So it's not like I had, could keep the arm tucked up to my side. Like it just, it was like a big ass pendant. It just went. If I'm walking away from you and you call my name and like flan, and I just like turn around real quick, like my arm would have flopped and just like kept swinging for like 3 minutes until the, you know, like a pendulum, it eventually stopped. So it was the weirdest fucking feeling in the world. And but yeah, it wore off and I can feel again, which is dope. But it, you know, I don't know, surgery is weird. Nobody should be able to hand you with a bill that high without talking to you first. I still haven't got like a line. I'm still waiting for like the line item breakdown of what it costs. You know, but fuck it though. You know, what was I going to do? Not pay it? I don't know. I need my hand back. But anyway, yeah, that was my surgery story. So this episode is going to obviously take longer than 30 minutes. I did get to see Chef Elise last week, which was dope. We went to see a movie. I didn't have her for like my visit because I still don't, I'm not comfortable with like having her by myself, and I'm not 100%. I can't even really pick her up right now. Like I'm still one handed to a certain extent. Like I can move and I can grab things and stuff like that, but I can't apply any force or put any weight on it. So I don't feel like it's a good idea for me to have her by myself, you know, like overnight. But I met her at the mall, and we went to see the Addams Family movie and did some time at the bounce house place and bought her some clothes. We had a good time. Nothing real funny to report. It was just a daddy-daughter date, and it was cool. And I really enjoyed that. But all right, so moving on to what I really wanted to talk about this afternoon. It jumped out at me. Like, I didn't know what I want. You know, I didn't know what to do a show about. I had no idea I was going to be able to talk for 30 minutes about the surgery. But the Dave Chappelle thing has been big. And I'm going to be honest with you, like, I bought Netflix this weekend. This is another one of those instances where you give power to things that you don't like by, like, complaining about them, you know? Like, I think there was a certain number of people that were going to watch the Dave Chappelle special regardless. Dave Chappelle puts out a special. I feel like I'm fucking up. Like, why can't I say that properly? Dave Chappelle. Anyway. Certain number of people that we want to watch the special regardless. It's Dave Chappelle. They want to laugh. They're gonna watch it. For me, it was on Netflix, and I still got like PTSD about Netflix and, you know, my ex-wife and being erased from the account and stuff. So I haven't had Netflix. I had no plans of going back. And you know, then this thing came out, and then I just kept seeing like the backlash, and I kept seeing like people being upset about it, and you know, and what he must have said and what he must have did. So I paid for a Netflix subscription just to watch this. I don't know if they do free trials, but it wasn't available. Maybe I've used like every email address I have already. I don't know, but you know, I had to pay to get Netflix just to watch this special. And I watched it yesterday, and I don't know. Like, I don't even want to talk about my opinion on this. Is not in regards to like Dave Chappelle. I felt like when I was reading all the stuff that there were probably like three or four of y'all that might have been sitting there like, I wonder what Flan thinks about this. And I, you know, my motto is, what can Flan do for you? So like the here you go. My mom, just to quote my mom to start out, my mom always, because I got picked on a lot as a kid. I was short. I was the smart kid. I wasn't from around there. I don't know. Maybe I was an asshole. It was probably a couple reasons that I got picked on a lot as a kid, but I did. And my mom used to always say to me, like, you can't control what people say about you. And you can't even feed into it. Because if somebody says something about you that you don't like, you only have two options, according to my mother. And those are to change so that they can't say that thing about you anymore, or to not care. And she's like, and even if you do change so that they can't say the thing that they were saying, they'll probably just find something else to say about you. So your best option is to just not care. And she used to also say to me, she was like, you know, Jesus Christ was perfect. Perfect. The only perfect human being that's ever existed. And they crucified him. So what hope do you think you have of living a life that is going to please everybody and going to make it so that no one ever feels a way about you, or says a thing about you, or does a thing about you? Like, you have, there's no chance in the universe. The only perfect person that ever existed was murdered. So, you know, be prepared to live with it. And so, I don't know. I watched the special, and I'll say, first off, I didn't think it was funny. I didn't think it was funny. And not in, like, I was offended, so I don't think it was funny. I don't think it was that funny, and I don't think it was funny purposefully. Like, I'm going to have to backtrack on the things I've said about other people in the past, and, you know, so I want to admit that. You know, I've talked about people doing the mental gymnastics for a person when they say something crazy, and then we do the thing where we explain it in a way that they didn't even take the time to explain it. And I may be doing that in this situation, because I've seen Dave Chappelle, like, dodge raindrops. Like, I've seen Dave Chappelle venture into dangerous territory and just be the only human being I thought alive could navigate that subject and be funny and poignant and get a point across without, you know, I don't know, engendering the kind of backlash he's gotten for this. And so I feel like it was not funny in a way that was purposeful. And I've only seen him do this on, like, a select few occasions. I think when he did that show in, I think it was outside in Ohio or whatever, and when he did the Candace Owens thing and talked about, you know, kicking her in her stanky pussy or whatever. Side, I don't know, sidebar. If you listen to, what is it called? The Midnight Miracle podcast. He does an episode where he, like, you know, gets the guy together to decide whether or not he owes Candace Owens an apology. And, you know, it's like, for what? He's like, oh, for saying her, you know, she got a stanky pussy, you know, whatever. And he was like, hey, would you like to know what I think it smells like? And not Dave Chappelle, but somebody else was like, halibut cheeks. And it was like, I don't know. I find that hilarious. You may find it offensive, but I find that hilarious. I can see why, if you're Candace Owens, that'd be offensive. If you're somebody that cares about Candace Owens, if you are a woman who cares about those issues, or having people refer to, you know, women's body parts that way, or natural hygiene issues that way, or natural body functions that way, I can see how that's offensive, but it is funny. This was not one of those cases. Again, like, I remember him, you know, having a very serious, like, long storytelling, poignant conversation about the Candace Owens issue. When he did that quick sit down about his Netflix, his show being on Netflix, and some of these things, and him not being paid for it. Like, it was presented as a Dave Chappelle special, and if you went and, like, watched it, you was waiting on the punchline and never came. He just has something to say. And he still said it in a way only Dave Chappelle could say it. Like, storytelling, you know, poignant, to the point, gut-wrenching, you know, heart strings, or whatever. All of you, you know the words I'm trying to find. That was one of those moments. His monologues for Saturday Night Live have not been especially funny to me. They've been super, like, poignant and on topic and relevant for the time. And in one of them, he even said, like, I can't even say something serious or real to you without a punchline being behind it. And I think there are moments in his career because of who he is and because of the stage he knows he gets, where he will set out to just say something important to you with or without a punchline, where the comedy is not the most important part of what he's presenting. And that's kind of what I got from watching that special, because I watched Dave Chappelle's specials and he's hilarious. I know he's hilarious. He's a master at what he did, at what he does. And I didn't feel that watching it. I didn't feel like a man was on stage trying to make people laugh. I felt like a man was on stage who's naturally funny, was talking about some things, and there are some punchlines in there and are some jokes in there because that's just natural for him and what he does. But I don't feel like that was the point. I also, in that Midnight Miracle podcast, and this is something that I have struggled with on this show, there was Bill Burr was on there once, and he talked about how, you know, not being freeing to understand that you don't have to be responsible for how people interpret what you have to say. It's like, you know, because he gets on stage and he does a lot of, you know, jokes and things that are, that contain racial content. And he's like, you know, he can always tell when, you know, there's a person that's taking it the wrong way, where he's making a joke and, you know, he can hear the people in the back, like, that's right. Yeah. You know, he can hear like the MAGA levels raising. And it's like, at a certain point, he had to realize he doesn't have to take responsibility for people misconstruing his message, because no matter how he says it, you know, somebody can take that and just make it what they wanted to hear or what jives with what makes sense with them. I think we are 100% in a place right now. I'll say America because that's my frame of reference, but I think it's just worldwide, where we base our facts off opinion. We don't base our opinions off facts. So we hear what it is that we want to hear, or we take the pieces that match with what with the narrative that we feel comfortable with, and that's what we run with, and that's what we say happened, and that's what we heard, whether or not that's what was said or not. And I think a lot of that happened in this special. You know, I think he was trying to say, especially toward the end, where if you really go back and listen to these specials and you hear what I had to say about these communities or whatever, it was never hate or I don't like you or I don't love you. It was clear, you know, he's clearly trying to say, I love you and I love all of you, and I wish nothing but happiness and the best and peace and, you know, and health for you and your families and anybody that you care about, you know. That's, and I feel that's genuine from him. And in the same token, that doesn't mean that I agree with your stances on everything. That doesn't mean that I don't find humor in, you know, in some of your stances or in the ways, you know, people approach things. And I don't know. It's just crazy where we've gotten. I'll say that, you know, based on some of the things I read in terms of people being offended by the special, and I brought up the Bill Burr thing, because this used to happen to me. Like, I would, in the early days of the podcast, I remember making it, there was this one guy in particular who I think just, whatever it is about my personality made him want to confront me at every opportunity that he got. And I remember making a joke about, like, Shannon Sharp. And I think either starting the joke or ending the joke with, like, Shannon Sharp is one of my favorite people. Like, he's definitely a person I listen to now, and that, I think, you know, says some of the dopest things. But I said something to the effect of, like, Shannon Sharp used to sound like a kid who got a word of the day calendar every day and just had to use that word. You know, like, he would just force words into situations that didn't make sense because it felt like it made him sound smart or something like that. And this dude got so, like, he started quoting me facts and stuff about, you know, Shannon Sharp's education or who Shannon Sharp was. And I was like, motherfucker, it was a joke, my nigga. Like, where did you lose that? Like, where did you lose the fact that it was a joke? And I said, you know, I admire this dude, and I hear what he has to say, And I was probably making a joke about the sound of his voice or something, like, you know, like I just feel like you found the piece you could use to be upset about, and you ran with that. Like, you obviously didn't listen to the whole joke. And yeah, man, I feel like that's what we do. That's what we do. Like, we just, we're in this space. It's like, I want to be offended by something, or I'm looking for a space to be offended. And the moment I get a keyword, or the moment I get, you know, any of these phrases that fit in the, this should bother me, then fuck it, it bothers me. And now I'm gonna cancel you. I'm gonna take you down. Anybody that's with you or stands with you, I'm gonna be against them as well. Everybody getting drugged and everything. You know, I mean, it gets crazy. And I don't know. I've been going to a lot of comedy shows recently, and comics are talking about this. This is why when you go to comedy shows, they take your phone, because there's no joke you can make that's not gonna be. I mean, I think comedy by definition, like, is going to paint someone or something in a not so flattering light. And that's where the humor, that's where the funniness comes in. You know, you either got people that either degrade themselves and slip on banana peels and you know, Chris Farley themselves, or you got people who say something about somebody else or whatever. You got South Park who says something about everybody, but that's just the nature of like jokes. There's a butt of the joke, and it doesn't necessarily mean a disrespect or a hatred or anything like that. But what I was, like I was saying, one of the things I did hear in the articles that I guess I can see the point to is that there's one particular lady. I think she's a showrunner for a popular show on Netflix. And she was, it wasn't so much that she was upset with Dave Chappelle, but she felt like the things that Dave Chappelle said in the special normalized opinions about her as a trans woman, that would be the reasons why, you know, she gets thrown up against, you know, walls and bathrooms and stuff like that, or she gets harassed and things like, and I get that. I get that, because definitely haven't heard Dave Chappelle take the stance he took on certain things, or say the things that he felt as freely as he did on that show, gave me the, because I've been wanting to talk about, you know, some of the issues with trans and pronouns and the way we all have to adjust right now on this podcast. And haven't felt the comfort level to do so. I haven't felt like it was okay for me to even express my point of view like that. Like, there was no appropriate way to do it. I guess as a comedian, maybe that is the only appropriate way to do it right now. And even that was inappropriate somehow. But yeah, you know, I don't know. I think we, like I said, my mom will always talk to me about not being able to control what people have to say about you. And it's that sticks and stones thing. Like, you can't. The goal should be to be strong enough to take whatever blows life throws at you. And when I'm saying blows, I mean words and opinions that don't jive with what you want. To be strong enough in whatever it is you believe that you can continue to believe those things and continue to believe those things happily without the agreement or approval of anyone else. Like, to me, the real test of whether you believe something is whether something is actually true to you, is that it is still true to you when no one else agrees with you. When everyone else is against you, will you still stand on that? Is that still the truth to you? You know? Or does it require, you know, some sort of agreements or reassurance from someone else? And it, I don't know, you know. I don't know. I looked up a little bit today, like, where this whole phobic thing comes from. Like, why we call opinions or words or thoughts that don't, I think it's gotten to the point where if you don't celebrate it, you're phobic. You know, if you don't celebrate Pride Month, you're phobic. If you don't, you know, if you don't believe that Caitlyn Jenner is Woman of the Year, you know, you're phobic in some sort of way. And like, and that's supposed to denote like a fear or an irrational fear. It seems like that's the way we use it. We use it as a way to negate any argument, irrational or rational, by just saying it's an irrational fear. It's a fear. You're doing it out of fear. You're doing it out of ignorance. You're doing it out of not understanding. And some of these people are seeking to understand. Some of these people are seeking to no longer be ignorant. They are acknowledging their ignorance, saying, I don't understand this. And it's almost in the approach. I feel like a lot of people in that vein get is, if you don't innately understand it, that's a problem with you. I shouldn't even have to explain it. I shouldn't have to sit down at the table with you and try to get you up to speed on what is, you know. I've talked about this on the show before. I don't think people sometimes understand how much the world has changed. Like, I legitimately am a person who went from ma'am and sir as ways of showing that I was raised right to avoiding those words for the same purpose. And you have to, like, if you can't see that a concept going from one extreme to another in a person's lifetime, I'm not an old man. I'll be 40 in a couple months. So in 40 years, you know, and in less than that, really, but in the span of my life, you know, something has gone from an extreme display of respect to an extreme display of disrespect. And that is a humongous shift. And it is going to take, if that is what we believe is right and a good thing to do now, then there's a whole re-education process involved in that. It is not something, it was taught to me for it to be innate the other way. And now you're telling me I should innately understand it a different way. And if I don't, something's wrong with me. And this is where, you know, people run into the problem. I also feel it's weird. I'm just going to say a lot because I'm rambling at this point. I also feel it's weird that if I don't identify you with the label that you prefer to be identified with, then you get to identify me with the label that I didn't choose either. You get to call me whatever phobic. I get to get canceled. You know, I get something thrust upon me that I don't think that I am, if I don't think that you are what you think that you are. If, you know, and maybe that's oversimplification of it, but I feel like there, things have shifted so much, and there's so much, and we're trying to put blanket statements on things that are extremely nuanced, and even nuances within the nuances. Now, say I got a buddy who, you know, made the transition from male to female, and you know, and he has a problem. Well, from what I've heard, this is not firsthand information. An individual that's made the transition from male to female, he has an issue with sort of like homosexuality, because in his mind, he's not gay, and the men that he wants to be with aren't gay. They are men that want to be with a woman that has a penis, and that's not gay, you know. And like, to me, that's just a whole heap of nuance, you know. And how everybody's supposed to innately know how to navigate this nuance is just, is beyond me. You know, it's a lot. And I don't know. I think Dave Chappelle was just expressing what he really thinks, that he really cares, and that he makes jokes. He makes jokes because they're conversation starters. He makes jokes because they allow people the space to have these conversations, not the space to hate. But of course, there's going to be somebody that takes it that way. And I don't know that there's any way he could ever phrase it that doesn't allow for that, because you can't control that. But at the same time, it does open the space to have the conversations. It does open the space to start discussing these things. And I don't know. I've had conversations with other podcasters about this, about some of these issues and the pronoun thing, and just, you know, and just as a person in a professional setting, just just, you know, getting to the point where it's almost as if you, when I get to a new job and I have to do my email signature, it's now a thing now when you do your email signature to choose your pronoun. And it's almost like, what if I don't want to? What if I don't want to choose my pronoun? What if I want to say, you can look at me and determine what pronoun you're going to use? And if you're wrong, maybe we'll have a conversation about it. You know, maybe we won't. I don't know. I'm not going to take offense from it because I don't believe that you did it maliciously or offensively. But it's almost like if I don't participate, then I'm not being in that space with everybody else. And maybe I'm not ready to, maybe I don't want to, maybe I don't feel like I should have to. Like, I don't know. Like, we're up in arms about mask mandates and vaccination mandates. There are a lot of mandates going on. There are a lot of things that are mandated and forced. And some of them are like borderline thought police. You know, like they want to remove this special from Netflix. And I don't know what the answer is. I don't know if it should be removed. Because I'm not, you know, nothing that was said that was directed toward me or a person that I know in a way I can understand the offense or the harm that the offense would cause. I'm reading the articles. I'm reading, you know, people having things to say about it. I'm reading how people feel. And I'm trying to understand because I want to understand. And I don't. And I want to feel safe to say I don't understand. And if you can explain it to me, I'd appreciate it. Because I honestly would. This is not, you know, I'm not being sarcastic. I want to understand. I want to be able to exist in this world. I'm seeing the things about whether or not the special should be removed. And that seems to be the pressure that's being put. And I'll be honest with you, the thought that crossed my mind was like, you know, we look at regimes like governments that don't allow, you know, art or journalism that has anything negative to say about the government as oppressive. We look at that as oppressive, that's a problem. We want to come in and we want to force democracy down their throats because, you know, the government don't let them say, don't give them freedom of speech, don't let them say what they want to say. If they don't like what you have to say, then you better not say it or there's going to be a problem. And I'm not so sure I'm seeing wholly the difference. And again, I'm not trying to put a target on anybody's back or say somebody's wrong. I'm trying to say I don't understand. And here's how I see it. And if you could clarify, if you could help me see the wrong in my way of thinking, I'd be open to it. I'd appreciate it. But yeah, I don't think the special was funny, and I don't think it was intended to be funny. I think the story about his friend at the end was poignant. And I think that somehow seems to be a larger point that's being missed in all this, because, you know, what happened to that individual for taking up for her friend is very unfortunate. You know, I think she should have had the space to feel how she felt. I don't think she was doing anything malicious or anything with any offensive intent. So I don't know. You know, like I said, I definitely feel like we've gone too far, and we always do. We always overcorrect. And then we overcorrect to the other side, and we overcorrect back to the other side again, and we swing back and forth like this pendulum or like my nerve block, dead arm, until we find a comfortable middle ground. And I hope we find that. I too want to, you know, just open up spaces to have the conversation. And I'd like to have the conversation. This is not a show I really wanted to do by myself. But I don't know how to approach people about having this conversation. That's how scary the world is for me right now. Like, surgery, at peace with it, whatever. Cut me open. Nerve block, go ahead, stick the needle in my neck. And that's pretty, he put a little like Sharpie mark where the needle was going to go in. They put me out before it actually went in, but the Sharpie mark was like right under my neck. It was reason to be afraid. But I was at peace with that. But just like saying the wrong thing or making the wrong joke or expressing how I feel about something, that shit is fucking terrifying. Fuck, happy Halloween with that one. That's, yeah, man, that's what we need to be afraid of. Fuck, if Freddy Krueger is not real, I don't give a fuck. Michael Myers, kiss my ass. Alien, whatever. The Thought Police, that shit is real. It's real. Get canceled out this motherfucker. I like how, and you know, and again, and I feel like, you know, this was so strategic. And, you know, he said in the beginning this was his final Netflix, but not his final, but his last Netflix special for a while. He kind of knew, you know, if this gets me canceled, cool, because I wasn't planning on doing nothing for a minute anyway. I was planning on disappearing again. I've done it before. I'm cool with it again. I've done it voluntarily. If y'all want to make it mandatory, you know, whatever, he'll do that too. But I don't know. I think enough people understand. But we need to have the conversation. We need to have the conversation. We need to be able to have the conversation without getting canceled. That's my thoughts on it. So if you wanted to know how Jay Flan feels about it, and what may very well be his last episode, it won't. Y'all, whatever. It's my platform. Can't really stop me. That sounded like a challenge. It wasn't. Anyway, if you're trying to get your life together, if you're trying to get your fitness goals, your nutrition, hit up my man, Zaya Fitness on Instagram, Z-A-Y-A-H Fitness on Instagram. He has a website also. It is Live Alpha Fitness. That is LIVAlphaFitness.com. So you can hit him up there. You know, he can get you right with your training programs and your nutrition programs. He's a cool dude. He's my homie, and he's a hell of an athlete. So if you're looking to get right in that area of your life, hit him up. He can do that for you. If you're looking for other ways to be impactful, be your brother's keeper. You know, take care of folks. TTCharities.org. They always got something dope going on. Donate what you can. Time, money, books, clothes, a like, a repost, a retweet. It all goes a long way. TTCharities.org. Hit them up. Do what you can. As far as me, I got merch. On the whatistws.com/store. /store. It is hoodie season officially. Some of the algorithm is over, but the merch is still there. But it is hoodie season, so coupon code hoodie season, HOODIESZN, will get you 20% off all like outerwear. It's just for the hoodie season category. So for your long sleeve tees, your hoodies, your sweatshirts, your hats, your neck gaiters, whatever, could be still doing that. All that 20% off with the coupon code hoodie season. Please help me send Chef Elise to Disney World. I had to think about it for a second. Might not be allowed there. But it is what it is. But with that said, you know that I love each and every one of you. I do, you know, when I say what can Flan do for you, it is sincere. There's ever anything I can do for anybody. If it's just lend an ear or whatever, please let me know. I do cap all monetary things at a dollar, but if you need a dollar, I'll send it to you. Absolutely, not a problem. Until it's like 1500 of y'all, and then it's a problem. But yeah, holla at your boy on all social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I'm out there. What is TWS? J.Flan. You can find me. But until we speak again, be safe, be the light, and be easy. Know that I love y'all, and in this world of all these extraordinary people, I'm glad there's you. Holla.
Last call for alcohol. Yeah. If this is it, like if this is the last joint, if this is the last hurrah, it's the last call for alcohol, baby. I gotta say, whether you knew it or not, it's pretty much at the finest bar establishment, the finest spirits and libations y'all could have had, baby. You might realize it now, you might have realized it back then, you might realize it later.
Love.